Thank you, Jackson. I haven't been keeping track if this was Jackson's first time up here or not, but he was wondering what he should read and how he should do this thing. I said passionately. I think he done good. So, come now. Long about April 27th, I got a text from Hans. Said, Harry, we'd love to have you give a Wednesday evening topic sometime in the next month or two. We don't have a topic for you, and would like you to pick a topic you're passionate about that you think we should hear about. So I responded. I said, I'm willing to do this. It raises the question, and a good question it is, what I am passionate about. I have a motto over my desk at work: be fearless in the pursuit of what sets your soul on fire. And I've told my children, I don't know what that is. So maybe in the spirit of preaching to the preacher first, I should give a topic on living out of our passion. I'll keep you posted. And so here we are. And I have a lot of questions this evening. I've done some corralling of my thoughts, so I have, I hope, some answers, but I have a lot of questions of what that's supposed to look like. I think it was in Mervyn's receiving line at the visitation, L. Perry Stutzman came through, and I was explaining to one of my children who this is, and he's not a very memorable kind of person. I said, well, Perry, how would you like to be remembered? And he said, well, I would hope people could at least think I was a pretty decent fella. And then he said, what do you think of me? And I said, oh, I think you're a pretty decent fella. Well, and what could he say? Because he could have said, way to hit minimums. But he didn't. He didn't say anything. But how would you want to be remembered? How do you want people to think of you? That might not be the most important question to give shape to our lives or direction, but it's something to think about. Reading one of Papa's poems, what a laugh. What a laugh. This old world just goes humping along. The people in this old world just go humping along. The people say to their children, they say, children, don't just go humping along. Whatever you do, don't just go humping along. What a laugh. So why aren't we laughing? It's kind of sad, isn't it? There's so much of that out there, and it's not just out there. You get up in the morning and you do what needs to be done, and the next thing you know, it's time to go to bed and do it all over again. What was the old saying? You dig the ditch to earn the money, to buy the bread, to gain the strength, to dig the ditch. I noted with interest, probably because of the topic coming up, a number of lines out of the Destinations Informer that we all got Sunday from Rob Miller. Church planting and leadership training, especially cross-culturally, is what makes our hearts beat faster. That's their passion. So we want to talk this evening about passion. Just take kind of an overview. Want to spend some time on why it matters. You know, why is that something more than just, well, some do, some don't. It's okay either way, whatever. To each his own. Or is there more to it than that? Why it matters. What it is not. What it is, and how to get it. So especially on the last part, those of you who are passionate, we want to hear from you. The rest of us need to learn from you. And I think all of us have passions. We need to learn how to develop them, how to channel them, and sometimes how to get them. If we find ourselves just kind of getting along, putting one foot in front of the other, living from one day to the next and not really feeling like our life is going anywhere. It might be time to back up and take stock and figure out how to inject some passion into that picture. So, why does it matter? Why is this a topic worth giving an evening to? Edith and I were on our way home from a week at the Philbrins in Ohio, a couple that does a lot the same as what Nevin and Joanne do. And we'd had a really good time there. We're walking into the Walmart and holding hands and I suppose looking happy because the lady there, the Walmart greeter there, she said, "You look happy." And I said, "We love God and we love each other." And we went on into the store and found our stuff and left again. I think she made some comment as we were leaving about how it blessed her to see us. I don't claim that's how Edith and I always go into the Walmart. But it was that time, and something struck her out of that. One of the people that I read an article in preparation for this was a Gretchen Rubin. Gretchen Rubin is to personal happiness what what's that Sparks Joy lady is to closet happiness. Marie Kondo. Okay. Anyway, Gretchen Rubin said, "I have a friend who is enthusiastic for practically everything. She loves her job. She loves to read. She loves baseball. She loves video games. She loves to travel. She loves to learn to new things. She loves clothes. I don't share most of her passions, yet I find her such a happy, energizing person to be with." And I think we can all identify with that. There are people that just, they give energy when you're around them. And those are the passionate people. And you don't have to read those kind of blogs long before you get a whole list of benefits of being passionate. You're happier, you're healthier, you're a better worker, you're more fulfilled, you live longer, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. I'll share one more and then pause for your thoughts of why it's important. The same Rob Miller, whose heart beats fast when he's doing church planning and leadership training, he says, "But disappointments are many. Sinful habits are not easily overcome. Believers with so much potential are tempted and sometimes fall back, bringing serious setbacks to their spiritual growth, requiring extended time for renewal." Does that make his heart beat fast? It happens. It's part of it. Church planning, leadership training, that's part of it. And I propose that it is the passion that carries you through those times, even when your heart's not beating as fast as it sometimes does. So I have one more point that I saved for last, but what are your thoughts? Why is this important? Why is this something worth going after? Gary.
Well, kind of along with that, I think it's the call of God and it's the moving of God that helps us when the passion is tested or wanes.
Okay.
About every year, you know, and the work was ahead of me, that's when I needed, that's when what really made me go was not the passion for the learning, but the reminder that God had called me and I needed to faithfully take the next step.
Okay, so it is a calling. God calls us, God puts his finger on our life, and then we respond in a way that's beyond just some drummed up enthusiasm. Hans.
I think God has one or several things that he wants each of us to do in order to contribute to the kingdom of the world around us. And I think he shows us that through our passions. And as we work hard to discover what God has created us to do, I think he works through our passions. As we discover that and become passionate about it, that's a really good indication and helpful indication of what he has called us specifically to do and to bless our world with
Okay, so God has specific calling or callings for us, and obviously those callings we want to pursue with passion, but also finding our passions, discerning our passions, can help us to find those callings. Good, what else?
I think of John 3:16, for God so loved the world that he gave his only begotten Son. To me, that's a lot of passion. And I'm wondering, is the level of our passion sort of dependent on how much we're willing to sacrifice in order to go towards what we're wanting to go for?
So the level of our passion might be determined by how much we're willing to sacrifice. So it's not just I feel great, so I will follow where this leads. I will follow in obedience and perhaps feel greater and greater about it as I go. Paul.
Well, there's maybe different kinds of passion. Isn't there one passion that we should all be passionate about? And then that individual passions. I think, as I read the scriptures, there, knowing God, knowing Christ, the same as Paul, that I may know.
Okay. Right. So there are some things Paul's saying that are for all of us. We're all called to them, and we should be passionate about them. And then there are other things that are kind of our unique calling that God specially gifts us with grace and passion for. And Arlen.
I'm answering as much the question about why we should follow our passion, the question, why did God give us passion? And part of this sounds crassly administrative and managerial, but when I think about my administrative roles, say family has sat together or been probably there or maybe work high school or whatever it is. It is in everybody's best interest to put people on the job they're passionate about and enjoy, because it gets the work done in the best way possible. Not just, but probably the fastest, but certainly probably the best. And so I think God may have given us passions and wanted us to find these passions.
God gives us passions so that the work gets done. And that, then going back to what Hans said, it's important that we find those passions so all the work gets done. Nelson.
I think this is an interesting question. It's a comment on it, but to live passionately about noble things involves risk. And to not be willing to do that, teaching the same place in mediocrity, but at least it's a good passion. Risk something.
to follow a noble passion involves risk. Tim.
This is maybe opening too big a can of worms, but what happens if passions and calling don't line up? I know people who are passionate about things that don't line up with their callings, and so they had to set those things aside. Good things that they're very passionate about, but can't pursue.
Okay. What happens when your calling and passion don't line up? Both of those require discernment, but one of them can be followed and one can't. Perry.
Well, I think the second coming of Christ makes us concerned, and God's calling on our lives for all of us. So I think there is a certain urgency that comes when we get.
Mm-hmm. The second coming of Christ lends an urgency that makes us passionate about our own lives and about the lives of those around us. Lowell.
I have a question for Tim. What would you find your calling? Well, I guess maybe it's more fair to say multiple passions. Because typically, there are people who are called to do things that they simply would rather not do and are not all that passionate about. But typically, if God calls, he gives them passion. But maybe an answer is more fair to say there's multiple passions that are mutually exclusive. That might be more confusing.
The one that I kept back, the best for last, was well covered in what you shared. So I appreciate that. And I just gave it the word stewardship. Our lives are not our own. What we do with our lives are not our own. And so for us to catch a sense of what God wants to do with our lives and then chase that is what honors him. I think of the parable of the talents, where the faithful stewards took what they had and they put it to work. Apparently, the more they had, the more they put it to work, the more they worked with it. We're not going to have actual sword drills, but as I call out references, I'll just, whoever finds it or has it memorized, say it. It can come from either side. Ephesians 2:10. Yes. Created unto good works, which God before ordained that we should walk in them. So there's a calling, and it was God's plan that you go in that path, do that good work. Colossians 3, 23 and 24. Colossians 3, 23, 24.
Because you know that you will receive your inheritance from the Lord as the reward.
Okay, we work with enthusiasm. We do it heartily as to the Lord. And there will be a reward. So, which is worse? A lack of passion or misguided passion? We won't all agree on what the misguided passions are, because one person says, oh, that's a waste of time. Somebody else is all excited about sports statistics and which year KU had the strongest team and how many digits we can memorize pi and having every hair in place or every blade of grass on your property in place or lengthy discussions about back episodes of Studio C or the Penguins of Madagascar or building an empire, or whatever. Now, sorry if I stepped on any toes there, but which is better? To have misguided passions, if you don't like my examples, come up with your own, but there are such a thing, or to not have passion. Just doing all the right things, staying out of trouble, not being out of the way, but not really being passionate about anything. Which is worse? Shane.
I like the illustration, I like thinking about the rudder of a ship that is effective only as much as there is motion. So to the extent that there is forward motion, the rudder can direct the ship. If it is sitting stationary, it can flip-flop back and forth as much as you want it to, but it doesn't do any good. So it's not directly answering the question, but certainly I have a bias toward motion with openness toward redirection.
Okay, so it might be easier to redirect motion than to try to get something stirred up in the first place. Laverne.
The angel of the one of seven churches in Revelation said, I wish you
were possible. I don't understand that completely. It took me a long time to understand it at all. But I believe that answers, goes toward answering that question. I hope so, because I have that reference written down in that context. Wish you were hot or cold. Get excited about something. And then if it's the wrong thing, we can deal with that. Paul.
Of course, we know that real extremes, so it's difficult.
Right. Brian.
Apostle Paul is passionate.
And he did a lot of harm. But that was what God used then. Brian and then John. Okay.
A heart that is not healthy does not have passion. And so, a heart with underlying issues will tend to be self-absorbed and not want to give or have anything to give or anything to be passionate about. And so that's why I'm so concerned about a lack of passion, because it's indicative of something else going on.
Okay, a heart that is not well, self-absorbed and not passionate about anything out there. Gary.
I think Apollos is another one like Paul. Zealous towards God, open towards God, and sincere, but it was easier to, like change. It's easier to get him redirected than if he wouldn't have been already looking towards God.
Okay, so he needed to be instructed more fully, but he had a momentum that could be used. Arlen.
I'm in agreement with this, with one caution. That is, some elders think that, let's say we're confronted with second-guessing our passion. We can say, well, at least I'm passionate about it, and don't get overly concerned about whether it's right or not. I think we need to be thoughtful about how our passions are shaping us, and the further we go in that direction, the harder it's going to reshape us. If God shows us back and wrong.
Okay, so I hear you saying that the passion is not the be all end all. I know that I'm on the right path because I'm passionate about it. Let's be cautious about that, huh?
I would say definitely the no passion is worse. Go back to Tim's question as well. There was a time in my life where I looked back on the last couple of years and saw what I was passionate about and was really discouraged because they were all pretty selfish passions. And where I've been living those passions out in selfish ways. And but then over the next few years, as I continued to seek God, I was really blessed how He redeemed those passions and directly used that time of learning about those things to serve others and make very good use of those passions. And so I would just say that if we are seeking God, I think He will bring passions and callings together, and He can redeem things that seem to. The basic way God made us is underlying our passions, even when we use those passions.
All right. Thank you. It's couple more hands. We have a couple more Roman numerals still too. So go ahead. Levon. Okay, that I think fits well with Roman numeral 4, how to get it. How to shape it, how to keep it, and we belong to each other in that pursuit. So let's keep that one on ice and come back to it. The second section, what it is not, kind of as a stepchild of the third section, what it is. And I think it might be helpful to figure out what it is if we spend some time on what it is not. And I don't necessarily want to spend more time on it, but I do have actually more notes on what it is not than what it is. Maybe that's simply because when we get to what it is, it'll just kind of crystallize if we figure out what it's not. So what it is not. First of all, it is not necessarily a lot of noise and commotion. There's some risk in looking at the last string of funerals and picking out two to focus on. You may have picked out a different two, but the two that especially impressed me as men of passion were Sam Dee and Henry Schrock. Those were soft-spoken men. They weren't doing a lot of jumping around and making noise, but they were passionate, and that passion communicated. Caution there. We jerk the wheel and wind up in the other ditch. There's another Sam Nyes that we know, and he is passionate, and he makes a lot of noise. And I am as cautious about being critical of that style of passion or saying it's not real passion as looking at that, that's not real passion. Let's leave room for each other to be passionate in the way that is us. But passion is not necessarily a lot of noise and commotion. Passion is not what you're supposed to be passionate about. It's what you are passionate about. Because there's lots of things that we're supposed to be passionate about. This is not to negate what Paul said. It is true that to love the Lord your God with all your heart, soul, mind, and strength, to love your neighbor as yourself, to meditate the law of God day and night, that is a calling for all of us. And if you're not there yet, then get there. Work on that. Develop that passion. It's a passion you should be passionate about. But the other passions, should you be passionate about gardening, for example? Well, of course, Amish Mennonite. Next question. Some of us are and some of us aren't. That's okay. Find what you are passionate about and be passionate about that rather than trying to figure out what you should be passionate about and trying to manufacture it or paste it on. Three, passion is not some club, some yardstick, some paralyzing fear of failure to measure up. I have found it tremendously freeing. A little quip that my sister, I think, invented, at least I heard it from her. If a thing is worth doing right, it's worth doing it all. And because of that, I have been given the courage to do things that I might not have done otherwise. I have taught small engines, for example. I have taught German, and the students learned German better than if there had not been a teacher. I'm pretty sure of that. I gave my daughter a poem last Christmas that I had written myself, an Elizabethan sonnet that I wrote out in calligraphy, because if things worth doing right, it's worth doing it all. And so to look at the people that just have it, and that's their lifeblood, and it can be paralyzing, and that's not healthy. It is true that the good can be the enemy to the best. It is also true, I believe, that the good can be a gateway to the best. By being willing to try something that you know you won't do as well as somebody else, you may find that that is really something that lights your fire and is worth following up on. Passion is not a substitute for hard work, dedication, and perseverance. There are those, and these last two are tied, I think. It is not a wandering dissatisfaction. Passion makes a good servant and a terrible master. And so we hear, get a job you love and you'll never work another day in your life. And other things kind of like that. And somebody who doesn't have a job that actually sets their soul on fire is kind of feel left out, and I should go find that job, right? Well, maybe you are in that job and you should find what it is about that job that you can set it on fire if it doesn't set you on fire. A good wife was using the restroom in the Walmart down by Wichita, and somebody, I hope it was a child, hadn't quite found the toilet. And there was a mess in the corner, and it was a real mess. And this dear lady was there cleaning it up, and Edith complimented her for being willing to do that. She said, "Well, Jesus said, if you would be great in God's kingdom, learn to be servant of all. In this job, I am serving other people." Cool. That's great. And she wasn't pasting it on. She was finding fulfillment in that job. She was choosing to be passionate about a job that doesn't just exude that passion. Martin Luther King Jr. said, "If a man is called to be a street sweeper, he should sweep streets even as Michelangelo painted, or Beethoven composed music, or Shakespeare wrote poetry. He should sweep streets so well that all the hosts of heaven and earth will pause to say, 'Here lived a great street sweeper who did his job well.'" It's doable. It can be done to be in a job and say, "I will find in this job the thing that gives me fulfillment." What comes to your mind? What passion is not? I won't pause long because time's going on. Yes, sir.
It's not about consuming. It's about producing.
Okay, it's the outward focus. And so that's where I think the weakness is in some of these, many of the blogs. It'll make you happier, healthier, more fulfilled, live longer. It's all about me. And then the ones that say it'll make you a better worker, you kind of say, who wrote that and what's their ulterior motive? Shane. Not always be fun. Passion is what gives you the strength to keep going when it's not fun. So what is it? I didn't even look up Webster's definition. There's a bunch of you have Webster in your pocket right here. If you want to look that up, you may and share it. But how would you describe or define what passion is? What's it look like? Something that your emotions are involved in. Okay. It's a focus. It's both a result of and a driver of focus. Brian. What you willingly sacrifice for. I wrote down here, caring enough about something to invest in it.
It can be an area of strength that meets a need.
An area of strength that meets a need.
Very important.
There was nothing. There was nothing there was nothing in his emotions that drove him to that. But there was a call. Richard Foster said, when Jesus cried out, my God, why hast thou forsaken me?" It was his hour of greatest triumph. Because the whether or not God actually turned away, his feeling completely alone and forsaken was symptomatic of his having taken on himself the sin of the world and dealing with it. And that was what he was passionate about. "For this cause came I unto this hour." So as we speak of the Passion of Christ and the Passion Week, etc. Gary.
Just said that Christ's sense of call drove him through to endure suffering, and so it seems to me that both passion and suffering can be part of the picture, but they are not the end. They are not really what tugs you. What tugs you is the call of God, the will of God, and the cause of God. Christ was faithful to the end because he wanted to save the world. He was willing to suffer because of the big picture. He wanted to restore lost people to fellowship with God. And it's that vision that I think can characterize victorious servanthood.
Okay, so I think you're fleshing out what was said earlier, that passion looks outward, not inward, and finds its object in something bigger than itself. Paul.
But the Apostle Paul said it's the love of Christ that constrains the whole feeling.
The love of Christ constrains me, Daryl. Okay, relationship is close to the center of true passion. You can pursue passion in isolation, but it naturally draws you to other people who are passionate about it, about the same things, and some things. There's not a lot of fulfillment in memorizing pi to 125 digits if you only recite it in your bedroom. It's when you are in fellowship with other people and you can regale them with this that it becomes fulfilling. That's right. I mentioned that earlier in one of the misguided passions, so we won't talk about it again. Arlo.
I'm wondering, you also said that a passion is rather consuming. Is that actually, how would you say that?
That's kind of what I said. I should. I think reading philosophy or theology could feel like it's consuming because you're just thinking of being that. So the contrast between passion about playing Call of Duty video game, you think about something, my mind goes to that, and my emotions kind of go to it too. And that can be, that's an indicator for our passion about, and then let's just say, okay, evaluate, is a good passion.
Okay. Orin.
And I care.
Okay. we ought to move on to how you get it, because that's kind of a fairly important part of what I'd hope to talk about or let you talk about this evening. It's a couple of things I want to read, not much, out of this book, The Passionate Teacher. I swiped this off of my son Andrew's desk. Obviously, the title caught my eye. This is from the foreword by Deborah Meyer. She says, "It is customary these days to tell teachers and parents and administrators, district staff, to go away for a day and get themselves a vision or a mission, no less. We're living in an age of inflated rhetoric, as though missions and visions were the result of deliberative processes, consensus arrangements, and a good agenda. Rob Fried, the author of this book, makes it clear that they develop out of our lives. They take time to articulate and shape, but the wellspring can't be managed or mandated. Passionate teaching of the kind described in this book is the work of learned craftsmanship, and it's made up of details." Flipping over to the prelude by the author, he says, "The core of this book is that passion is not just a personality trait that some people have and others lack, but rather something discoverable, teachable, and reproducible. Passion and practicality are not opposing notions. Good planning and design are as important as caring and spontaneity and bringing out the best in students." So, basically he's saying it is something that can be acquired, taught, and it doesn't happen just because you happen to be one of those passionate people, like some are and some aren't, but it can... You do it as a result of disciplined choices. As far as how to get it, I don't have these in order except the first one. The one that, and a bunch of these would be worthy of an evening by themselves. The first one I wrote down was margin. Margin is... See, I don't even know very much how to describe it. The book by that title is on my list of books I'm going to read sometime. At least it's not on the list of books that is at least that long of ones that I have started and haven't finished. But margin is what keeps us from the tyranny of the urgent, just always having to do the next thing, the urgent thing, and never having the time to actually figure out what's the important thing. One more of Papa's poems. It's called Nostalgia. Some of these poems make you smile. This one I find very sad. "The young lad took my hand. We went to see his treasures. We did the barn, upstairs and down, then cut across the meadow to the woods. We did the creek and swimming hole. We saw his treasures. I think we did. The boy could tell you if I just knew where he is. He slipped away in bits and pieces here and there in all the years before he took my hand. I'd like to find the lad if I had time. Forgive me, boy, but I must punch the clock." And so we need margin to step back and figure out what's the important thing among all the urgent things. One of the things that happens when you strive for margin is you have to say no. And that makes other people sometimes unhappy. So we had a really good prospect for the next editor of the Plain Talk. And as of today, we don't anymore. She said it's something she would enjoy, but there's just too much going, and she has to say no to some things. So we will keep trying, and if there's somebody out there who wants to say no to something else, they can say yes to that, talk to me afterwards. What do you have to share, and how do we get it?
Pushing Shane. Back on some of the cynicism about time away developing and being intentional about discerning some of these things. It's absolutely true that I think we inherently
Okay. So if that time is spent in looking at our lives and discerning what is our passion, then it may be time well spent. If it's time trying to come up with something because that's the thing that we have to do, then it may not be. Brian.
Do my feedback for and taking time away to say what are the values of the passion and mission might be a little bit like the question you asked at the introduction, what do you want to be remembered for? And then answering that question, and then you might figure out that's not actually what I'm passionate about right now. Mm-hmm. Make some choices, not make some decisions. And I think it's easy to allow passion to be kind of like excitement, something that happens to us spontaneously, sometimes accidentally. And if we allow it to be that, then we end up feeding passions that aren't what we really want to be feeding. So if we decide what we want to, or what God wants to be pursuing, and then make conscious choices to feed that, that I think is what builds passion over time. And so coming back to the teacher introduction, we need to be conscious about it and make decisions, but we also need to feed with all those little choices and decisions.
Mm-hmm.
Or it'll never be more of those standards.
Okay, thank you for that. What else? The time is yours. All three remaining minutes. How do we get this? How do we chase these passions? Daryl.
So I'm thinking about Paul when he said, "I've learned in whatever state I am, I can be content." It seems to me that one of the driving factors in Paul's life was that he had a relationship with Jesus Christ, and that reality had completely changed his life, and he was passionate about that. It went with him no matter where he was, whether he was tied up in prison or whether he was drowning in the sea. He was passionate about one thing, and it really didn't matter what state he was in. He could be passionate about it. It seems to me that if we are going to say we have a passion that cannot be extinguished, it has to be a relational passion. And it starts, first and foremost, with the relationship with Jesus Christ. And that changes and colors all the other passions that we have.
Okay. The relationship with Jesus Christ changes and colors all the other passions that we have. Have you ever known a person who was just uber passionate about one thing and then the rest of his life was just, meh, whatever? They may be out there, but I can't think of any. Generally, passionate people are passionate, often about a number of things. And so to have that overriding passion, I think can help spark and guide other underlying passions. Tim.
Kind of along the same lines. Two things come to mind for how you find passion. The one is you will receive power after the Holy Ghost is going to find you. Passion and power are not completely synonymous, but they do tend to go hand in hand. The other is Paul says, Paul tells us to stir one another up to good works, to provoke one another to good works. I get passionate when I'm around people who are passionate. I get passionate about the things they are passionate about,
mm-hmm.
Without trying. And so there again, it's a relationship. So if I want to get passionate about something, I don't read a book. Some people do. I get around people who are passionate.
Okay, and that comes back to what LaVon was saying earlier about how we need each other to kindle and shape our passions. So if you have a passion or think, if you've identified something that makes you feel fully alive, but you're not walking in that, you're not living in that, then go spend some time with somebody who is. And soak it up. Maybe they've been told to not spend time with people who are an energy drain, so that could be a problem. More thoughts? Yes, Judith. Okay, two things that come out of that for me. Don't try to be somebody else. And the second is ask, seek, knock. If any man lacks wisdom, let him ask of God. God is interested in the answer to this question for each one of us individually. And that's something that's worth asking him about. All right, well, I appreciate the liveliness, the passionate discussion that we've had this evening. I think that indicates that we recognize it as something important and something attainable. And as we pursue relationship with God and with each other, we will walk in that passion to the glory of God.